is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Tuesday, December 10th. House Democrats have now unveiled official articles of impeachment. Here is Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff.
The evidence of the president's misconduct is overwhelming and uncontested. And how could it not be when the president's own words on July 25th, "I would like you to do us a favor, though," lays so bare his intentions, his willingness to sacrifice the national security for his own personal interests. And when the president got caught, he committed his second impeachable act, obstruction of Congress, of the very ability to make sure that no one is above the law, not even the president of the United States. The evidence is every bit as strong that President Trump has obstructed Congress fully, without precedent, and without basis in law. If allowed to stand, it would decimate Congress's ability to conduct oversight of this president or any other in the future, leaving this president and those who follow to be free to be as corrupt, malfeasant, or incompetent as they would like, with no prospect of discovery or accountability.
So the two articles of impeachment are abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. Why just these? Why now? Here's Schiff again answering, why now?
Now, some would argue, why don't you just wait? Why don't you just wait until you get these witnesses the White House refuses to produce? Why don't you just wait until you get the documents the White House refuses to turn over? And people should understand what that argument really means. It has taken us 8 months to get a lower court ruling that Don McGahn has no absolute right to defy Congress. 8 months for one court decision. If it takes us another 8 months to get a second court or maybe a Supreme Court decision, people need to understand that is not the end of the process. It comes back to us and we ask questions because he no longer has absolute immunity, and then he claims something else, that his answers are privileged and we have to go to back to court for another 8 or 16 months. The argument, why don't you just wait, amounts to this. Why don't you just let him cheat in one more election?
House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff this morning. With me now, New York Times White House correspondent Annie Carney. Annie, thanks so much for joining us. Hi.
Thanks, Brian. How are you?
Good. So there's been a theory that the House could vote to impeach, but then not refer the articles of impeachment to the Senate right away. I didn't even know until a couple of days ago that they have that option. But they would not refer right away under this scenario while they continue to push for the courts to order Mulvaney and Bolton, et cetera, to testify. Is that just people fantasizing on TV, or is that based on possible reality as far as you know?
Well, I think that is unlikely. I mean, just listen to the Schiff remarks that you just played. If they went that route, that would stand in direct contrast to the explanation he made of why now, that they're not going to wait on the courts, that it would just give this president, as Schiff said, an opening to cheat on another election. They clearly want to move along with this. I think that what's going to happen now is going to be a very quick unfolding of events. The Judiciary Committee will begin debating the articles tomorrow, potentially voting potentially on Thursday, and there could be a Senate trial early in January is kind of the timeline that I'm hearing that everyone wants to move ahead with.
When you say that the Judiciary Committee, and I heard Chairman Nadler say this too in the news conference this morning, it wasn't really a news conference. They said it was going to be a news conference, and then it was just an announcement, and they walked off. But Judiciary Committee Chairman Nadler did indicate that there will be a vote in the Judiciary Committee tomorrow to refer the articles of impeachment to the full House. Is there going to be some kind of televised public debate? The 41 members of the Judiciary Committee, 24 Democrats, 17 Republicans. Is this going to be a thing tomorrow, as far as you know?
I don't know yet what the televised plans are. In terms of them not taking questions today, I already saw some backlash from Republican staffers on the Hill saying that's not a press conference. Reading a statement and not taking any questions is ridiculous when you're announcing articles of impeachment. So more process, questioning of the process and raising flags about that this is all political theater is already the argument they're making. I don't know what the plan is in terms of televised hearings tomorrow, but if it was, we'd probably see more of what we saw yesterday, which is two sides talking past each other completely with two sets of facts and two audiences.
Right. Ugh. On narrow rather than broad, just these two articles, nothing from the Mueller report, and for that matter, no emoluments, no inciting to violence, no hush money, no stealing from charity, which was an admission in court just the other week, on how narrow this was. It's been said politically to be good for Democratic members of Congress from swing districts. Do you get why that would be safer politically than including charges from the Mueller report or other things?
Yeah, and this is a calculated move by Democrats to put, after listening to moderates who said they couldn't support broader charges. The whole list of things you just read, if they impeach him for all of that, it's playing into the Republican argument that Democrats have been trying to get him out of office since the day he got in. They've investigated him and found nothing, and they just keep going, and it's all they have this sense that he is a criminal and they want him out of office, and they're searching for a target. That's a harder thing for Democrats in swing districts to support. The narrow way lets this be a national security issue, which is easier for moderates to defend just the facts of a national security issue. And also, I think it's smart political move for Pelosi, where it looks like we're doing the smallest possible bite of this apple, that we're not trying to take him down on all these other things. We're being very cautious, which I think, and they've clearly let it be known that they've taken the narrowest route possible. So I think that's also probably making her look, you know, not like a bloodthirsty speaker out to take him down, taking a cautious approach.
I guess the other way to look at it, and I don't know how much internal debate there was about this, was to list a number of these other things to make the argument that they actually genuinely believe, I think, that he's grossly unfit for the presidency.
Right.
And that, as I heard somebody put it, he's a one-man crime wave. And so when you go to hush money and you go to emoluments and you go to stealing from charity, plus obstruction in the Russia investigation, plus all the Ukraine stuff, that it makes the case that the Democrats actually believe, which is, this is not about a phone call with Ukraine's president, or this isn't even about just the more coordinated attempt to get that favor from Ukraine's president. This is about a president who is so grossly unfit over and over and over again, and look at all this, and he's a threat to our democracy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I guess they landed on the other side of that question.
They did land on the other side of the question. I think the other argument in there, in for the narrow version, is that, you know, this is a pretty simple incident to understand, the quid pro quo, pressuring a foreign power to interfere and meddle with your political opponents at home. And the concept of a quid pro quo is simple. Emoluments and this is murky and complicated, and in some ways it's much easier to understand what the president did in this Ukraine saga.
You're a White House correspondent. Has the White House reacted yet?
Well, Donald Trump has reacted on Twitter. There was an all caps witch hunt tweet just now. His campaign has put out a statement saying, their big talking point is using Nancy Pelosi's own words against her, which is that she always said back in the day there would be no impeachment unless it was a bipartisan impeachment. And this certainly is not a bipartisan impeachment. This is falling completely along party lines. And they're saying she's doing it anyway. She's doing what she said she wouldn't do. It's rank partisanship, political theater, and it's just an excuse because they don't want him to win in 2020. That's basically the White House reaction to this.
Trump did not send a lawyer to defend him at the House impeachment hearings. Do you know what they have planned for the Senate trial?
We don't know what lawyer he's going to send to the Senate trial, but we do know that he has. They think that that's a better forum and a better stage for him than the House. So they kind of wanted to not participate in the House process, which they have called illegitimate, and don't want to deign to participate with the Senate. They think they have a better hearing and a chance to present their side of the case. We don't know yet who is going to be his actual lawyer there, but there has been some disagreement in the White House about whether a long trial makes sense for him or a short and wrap it up. We know what the outcome of it is, that there will be an acquittal by Senate Republicans. The question is, what favors Trump, like a long drawn out process to mount his side of the case or not? And that's kind of been under discussion.
I want to play another clip. This is not from this morning. This is from back on October 4th. Because I see that the Democrats plan to use in making their case some of the things that President Trump and, for that matter, others in his administration have done right out in public. And one of the arguments that the Democrats have, and sometimes they make it, in my own personal opinion, they don't emphasize this enough from their side, considering how damning it is. It's the fact that even if Trump says there may have been something there with the Bidens, there may have been something there with 2016 to investigate, there's no evidence that he's concerned with any other kind of corruption or potential corruption. The only thing he ever asked about was these things because they give him a leg up in the 2020 reelection campaign. And so when he was leaving the White House to go somewhere back on October 4th, and I think the sound quality on this may not be perfect, folks, but listen, you'll get it. A CNBC reporter, I believe it is, asked him that question about, has he ever said anything about any other corruption that doesn't pertain to his reelection campaign? Listen.
Have you asked foreign leaders for any corruption investigations that don't involve your political opponent? That is, are there other cases where...
we would have to look, but I tell you, what I asked for, and what I always will ask for, is anything having to do with corruption with respect to our country. If a foreign country can help us with respect to corruption and corruption probes, and that, I don't care if it's Biden or anybody else, but if they can help us, if Biden is corrupt, if his son is corrupt, when his son takes out billions of dollars, billions, and he has no experience, he just got fired from the Navy, when they do that, that's no good. So the only, just to finish your question, anything having to do with corruption, I actually feel I have an obligation to do that.
So he says anything having to do with corruption and with respect to our country, but then on examples that don't pertain to his political fortunes, his only quote in there was, you know, we would have to look. And then he comes back to Biden, Biden, Biden. It's incredibly damning. I didn't hear that much of that in the impeachment hearings.
It's a really good point. And it's not surprising from Donald Trump, who seems to only be interested usually in what affects him personally. And we've seen back at the famous summit with Putin, he basically denied Russian meddling in the 2016 election and then reversed course when that blew up. But he doesn't have a deep interest or stake in corruption in our elections. He's made that clear. He only cares about his own election. So this comment is kind of in line with his stance on being willing to dismiss other election interference in the past.
Right. It isolates a variable in a way that demonstrates how much of a self-dealer he is. Mm-hmm. We'll see if they present it that way in a Senate trial, if they get to a Senate trial, and we'll see if that moves anybody. We were going over on the show the other day one of the Clinton articles of impeachment as an example, and it was obstruction of justice, but then there was item one, he lied under oath about this. Item two, he lied under oath about that. Item three, he directed another witness to lie under oath about something, and there was a fourth one. Do you know why they didn't lay it out in that regard?
I don't, because I'm not on the Hill, so I don't. I haven't been talking to them about the process of today's announcement. Just one more point on the obstruction of Congress. It's been interesting to watch the White House sort of not cooperate and then make their main talking point that there are no firsthand witnesses testifying. And that has been, you know, when we saw all of the civil servants over the past month coming forward, the main argument is that none of these people had direct firsthand knowledge of the president's conversations. And all the people who would, Mick Mulvaney, John Bolton, other White House officials, have been barred from testifying. So it's like, it's just been sort of like logically.
It's the supreme paradox.
Yes.
Of this whole process, because that's part of their big defense. It's not their only defense, but
right.
It's one of the biggest points of their defense. You just have hearsay. You don't have enough
right.
people saying that they know what
but
the president ordered.
People who know, and we won't let you talk to them.
And we won't let you talk to them. Well, to that point, I think John has an interesting question. John, you're on the air. Hi.
Well, good morning, Brian. I'm wondering about, as we move on to the Senate, since I believe the Senate sets their own rules for the trial, I'm wondering, what if three senators got together, which took away the majority, to pass something, and they said the only way we'll go along with your rules is if you make this a secret vote in the end result?
With respect to secret ballot, are you saying could the Senate pass rules so that the senators themselves don't have to declare publicly which way they're voting?
Correct. Just as we vote secretly, you know, I've read articles stating that that's a possibility. So if they set the rules, I think many of the senators would vote against them if it was a secret, was a secret ballot.
Interesting. John, thank you very much. Annie, my first thought on that is that it'll never happen, because in something this consequential, the people of every state are going to pressure their senators to disclose how they voted.
Yeah, and I think it'll never happen because this process will be run by Mitch McConnell, who is going to want to wrap this up and get he supports the president. So why would he want to create a system where there was less control over his caucus or Republicans? He wants to maintain full control, and he does that by knowing where everyone's voting.
Also a good point. There's a theory that both Pelosi and Trump want this to move fast now, but you would think the same timeline couldn't be good for both of them. Do you know what the president wants and why?
Yeah, I know. It is kind of funny that it would be politically expedient for both sides. For Trump, I mean, if a trial starts in early January and is wrapped up quickly, he has the rest of the year to campaign on the witch hunt, partisan political theater. They tried to take me down. I'm fighting for you. They'll always be against me, et cetera, and so forth. But as I said before, there has also been some disagreement and back and forth inside the White House about whether a long trial could actually be helpful to him. So I think we don't yet know where that will land.
And I guess there's been back and forth within the House Democratic Caucus, but they also landed on, let's get this out of the way before election season.
Well, for the Democrats, I think that, like, it's true that there's an election coming up. Like, Nancy Pelosi, when she got irate at the idea that she hates the president and said and listed all these reasons why she doesn't agree with him, and she said, but that's for an election. This is not about hate. This is about the Constitution. All those other issues are for an election. That's the problem the Democrats have, that the closer we get to an election, it does become a chance of, like, well, the voters get to decide who sits in the Oval Office. I think there is some desire to not push very close to November 2020.
Right. And that was a good moment for Pelosi in many respects. And one of them, I think, is that she made that clear distinction, in case any American people who were watching were confused about that, that they're not impeaching based on policy differences.
Mm-hmm.
They're impeaching only based on what they see as violations of his oath of office under the Constitution.
And the the Republicans are trying to muddy that water and make it look like this is just bad blood, and they just don't agree with him and don't like his policies, and that's why they're doing this. So Pelosi has to make that point very clear.
There's other breaking Trump-Pelosi news, and I want to get your take on how you think this relates. Speaker Pelosi has just announced this morning progress in negotiating with the president on the revised NAFTA trade deal called the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement, or USMCA. Do you have anything on that from the Pelosi or Trump side, how locked they are on an agreement and the politics from either side of doing this right now?
It's a huge victory for Trump to get this, a very strange split screen when at 9 o'clock the Democrats in the House are announcing impeachment charges, and at 10 o'clock they're announcing that the USMCA deal is moving forward. Weird day.
Weird day. And I guess it's kind of like the timeline. They both want it to go fast, but
right.
for different and opposite reasons.
Right.
And
right.
they both want this new NAFTA or USMCA agreement. Trump, so he can say, yeah, he's got this big accomplishment. And Pelosi, so she can say that accusation that we're all about impeachment
right.
and we're the do-nothing
right.
Democrats is wrong. We're also working
right.
on the big issues.
Right. And so when they both, like, someone has to be wrong, right? Someone is making a political calculation that is wrong. We'll see.
We'll see. Time will tell. White House correspondent Annie Carney from The New York Times. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We've been inviting listeners who think President Trump should be removed from office to write their own article of impeachment and record it on our voicemail the last few weeks. Now we'll flip the script. For those of you who think Trump should not be impeached, it's your turn. Write out a short but organized argument against removing him from office. To see how to submit it, you can go to the website impeachmentpodcast.org and click on the tab that says Articles of Impeachment. Or you can just write your organized argument and call it into this voicemail line, 844-745-8255, and leave a voicemail, 844-745-8255, or go to impeachmentpodcast.org. Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, which we also invite you to listen to. It's The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, streaming live then at WNYC.org. See you tomorrow.